welcome to Hero Hype episode 25. Yes, we are back, though you may have been wondering about our very prolonged silence. If you've listened to the previous episode, which will have come up in quick succession to this one, I was in New York for New York Comic Con, and things got a little crazy, meaning I didn't get enough time to edit that episode, so I've just been editing these one after the other, and they're all going up at the same time, and you may, schedules allowing, get a third episode this week after this one. So, lucky you guys, you will have a lot of us to listen to.
Lucky or unlucky?
Well, I'm hoping lucky if they're continuing to listen to us, but hey. Right, we have got a lot to get through because while I was away, everything came back. Absolutely everything. So, not only...
And you picked a terrible time to go away.
I did pick a terrible time to go away, but also it was totally worth it, which we'll get into later in the episode. So, as you might have heard, I'm back, and Caitlin is here.
Yep.
You can try say hi a little bit better than that. Enthusiasm!
Hello!
Much better. Yes, it's just us on our lonesome again. We will try and get a guest host on when we settle back down and things aren't so crazy. But as always, guys, if you want to get involved in the conversation with us, you can get hold of us on Twitter, which is at Hero Hype Podcast. Leave your comments in this post when the episode goes up on hyperball.com, or you can email us, herohypepodcast@gmail.com. You've got plenty of ways to chat to us, and we are always happy to hear from you. But we are going to get right down to it with a brief history, which, as always, because TV tends to be the most active right now, is for an upcoming TV character. So, this week you have got a brief history of Legion. So, David Charles Haller is the son of Charles Xavier and Gabrielle Haller, the Israeli ambassador to Great Britain. Xavier and Gabrielle had an affair in Israel that led to her pregnancy, though Xavier was unaware he was going to become a father before he left the country, and Gabrielle concealed David from him. Gabrielle and David eventually relocated to Paris, where Gabrielle found love with a man called Daniel Chomron. Their peaceful life wasn't to be, however, when terrorists attacked their home, intent on wiping out the Israeli population from France. David witnessed the murder of his stepfather, and the trauma awakened his mutant abilities, frying the brains of the home-invading assassins. His powers didn't end there, and he made a telepathic connection with each of his victims, causing David to experience the thoughts and emotions of each of them as they died. This forced David into a catatonic state, and the mind of the leader of the assassins was absorbed into his consciousness. Karami, the assassin, and David's personalities eventually split, and through his manipulation of David's powers, learned his true nature, that of a gentle and innocent boy. Karami attempted to restore David's mind back to its normal state, but the damage had been irreversibly done. David's mind had fractured into further identities, each of which controlled a different aspect of his powers. Though Karami attempted to reintegrate these personalities, some were resistant and led to David and his powers becoming unstable. So, why are we telling you about Legion? Well, that would be because Marvel and Fox have decided to play nice and are developing a Legion television series. Together. Yeah, I know. The apocalypse is coming, but not X-Men apocalypse. That's a completely different kind of apocalypse. I was sitting around minding my own business when this news popped up and thought I was going to literally have a heart attack because I was like, wait, what? It has been crazy because not only are we going to get Legion, which is going to be on FX, we're also going to be getting Hellfire, which is going to be on Fox. two television series with Marvel and Fox playing nice with each other. I don't know who sold their soul to a Crossroads demon, but I just mind blown, absolutely blown. What did you think when you saw this news?
I mean, I had zero familiarity with either property, so I was like, oh, that's interesting, and kind of went on with my day. So seeing more about it is very intriguing, but the whole partnership makes me go, interesting. I wonder how this is going to blow up in everybody's face at some point.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that we had was that rumor going around, which has since been debunked, though. Either way, take it with a pinch of salt, I guess, where it was reported that Fantastic Four would be going back to Marvel as sort of an under-the-table agreement between Fox and Marvel for Fox to be able to get these television series to pilot. So it was debunked. They did say, nuh-uh, there's no truth to it, not a chance, not happening. But you will remember that exactly the same thing was said regarding Sony and Marvel and Spider-Man, and look where we are right now. So I don't know what to believe anymore, other than the fact that if Marvel were to get Fantastic Four back, I don't think it would necessarily be for the team themselves that they would want Fantastic Four back, but rather for the villains it would unlock from this sort of purgatory kind of area of these crossover villains between Fantastic Four and the Avengers that they cannot use. And we're talking some of the best villains. You know, not only the Super Skrulls, but you've got Doctor Doom and you've got Galactus. You know, these are big, really cool villains that they can't touch. So yeah, I guess it remains to be seen whether or not that will actually come to fruition, because I don't believe anyone when they deny rumors anymore. I don't believe anything. I don't believe anything I read on the internet ever. I don't believe that they do have it. I don't believe that they don't have it.
What? You're skeptical? I'm so shocked.
I know. Gosh. Okay. Other S.H.I.E.L.D., well, S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel news. Let's see. The Agent Carter cast was revealed at New York Comic Con. So they gave us a little bit more information during the panel. So, Danny Sosa is going to be there. He's going to become the head of the L.A. office where Peggy will be working. People are kind of speculating again that it could mean a possible romance for Peggy between her and Sosa. But Chad Michael Murray is also returning. And yeah, we're also getting back Dottie. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, obviously we know that we were going to have Jarvis and we're going to have Howard Stark. But, yeah, the other thing, speaking of Jarvis, is that we are getting Mrs. Jarvis.
Amazing!
We are actually going to be seeing her. So who's been cast as the lovely lady? Well, Lottie Verbeek, who, if any of you are Outlander fans, she plays Gallus Duncan. I won't actually spoil anything from there for anyone who hasn't gotten around to watching Outlander, but she is fantastic. Ah, she's so good in that. So, and she's super pretty. Oh my god, she's absolutely stunning. So, Jarvis, you did. You did good. we also got, is it Wynne Everett, who will be Madam Mask. Curry Graham, who will be playing Madam Mask's husband, and Reggie Austin, who will be playing Dr. Jason Wilkes. So, yeah. Larger cast this season. Obviously no Angie, still. seems to be in contention about on whose side that's being tripped up on, whether it's the actress or Marvel themselves. Marvel have gone, well, it's up to the actress, and the actress has gone, well, Marvel haven't reached out to me, so who knows what's going to happen there. Did any of these casting announcements excite you?
I'm particularly interested in seeing more Dottie.
Yes.
And it makes the most sense, I think, for her of any of the cast from last season to show up in across the country.
Yeah.
Considering who she is, where the other ones are like, gee, that's convenient that they're suddenly being transferred to LA when Peggy goes there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for Howard, Howard's whims take him wherever he wants to go. So for me, Howard and Jarvis upping and moving over to LA,
they make sense, but like, yeah. Sousa.
Well, I think Sousa was said that he's going to become the head of the New York offices. Oh, no, Sousa is going to be head of the LA offices. And
that's sure convenient.
Yeah. And then, yeah, on the other side, it's Jack Thompson is going to be head of the New York offices. And then Sousa is going to move over to LA and become head of the LA offices. And Peggy's transferring with... It's all crazy. Everything is going all over the place. So, yeah, it's just a huge upheaval of all of the characters. But, I mean, that could mean that because we're getting Chad Michael Murray, we're going to see some back and forth between, like, the New York offices and the LA offices, maybe. Which means that seeing Angie wouldn't be entirely out of the question, even if she doesn't move to LA like some of the other characters. So, who knows? Again, Agent Carter can't come back soon enough.
I know, give it to me now.
Let's see, what else did we get? Other casting news. Powers Booth is joining Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3. In what is being called a menacing new role. So, yeah, Booth is going to be playing Gideon Malik, who is described as a character that even the stone-cold Grant Ward would fear. So, yeah, a character that Ward is going to fear.
I can get behind that.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true. Though someone did point out that this isn't Powers Booth's first foray into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He was also an unnamed member of the World Security Council in The Avengers, though he didn't reprise the role later on. So,
So will he be this time?
Yeah.
Curious.
It is curious. Like, is he going to be playing a character connected to his previous, you know, appearance in the Marvel Cinematic Universe? Or are they going to do what they usually do when they reuse actors and go with something completely different? You know, it would be quite interesting to learn that some kind of powerful bad guy had infiltrated the World Security Council. I mean, we know that Hydra infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. If that got further than that, you know, it would be quite interesting to see that as a link. If they decide to go that way, of course.
Or it could be a completely different force.
It could be. Ooh, two forces that potentially infiltrated S.H.I.E.L.D. and the World Security Council.
Wouldn't that be something?
Wouldn't that, yeah.
That'd be terrible spies.
Yeah, so terrible. So terrible. Yeah, right. Let's get through the rest of this Marvel stuff. Also, what we got, first Daredevil Season 2 trailer, which I got to see live at New York Comic Con during the Netflix panel. That room was electric when this came out. Because right before they showed the season 2 trailer, they did like a sizzle reel of like all of the best moments from the first season. which was pretty damn cool. But yeah, so we got to see our first look at Electra.
Electric for Electra.
Yeah. Our first look at Punisher, and people went insane for Punisher. Like, even up, because I was sat up on the balcony with Jen, who's also from Hyperball, and literally just people, like, you could see every, like, you could see the entire audience, and there were, like, people standing up, throwing their arms in the air, cheering, screaming, and it was insane. Like, people are ridiculously excited for Punisher specifically, which I get in terms of his connections with comic book fanboys. He is a huge character for them. People love, like, particularly fanboys love him. So I'm more excited for Elektra personally. Not that I dislike Punisher, but, you know,
Elektra. Give us more awesome ladies.
Yeah, pretty much. Though, yeah. We did hear his first line, though, which a couple of people, like, it's kind of 50-50 on whether he said beg or bang. So either way, both of the lines fit particularly well with Punisher, but it's in contention. Nobody can quite figure out exactly what he said, and there were no closed captions on the trailer, so we have no confirmation about which one it actually is. But, you know, it's looking pretty good. They haven't filmed the entire thing yet, I don't think. So this is probably just finished footage that they had available to show. But I'm excited. I mean, I'm more excited to see Jessica Jones first, because that's new, it's different, it's... But the continuation of Daredevil story is going to be awesome. And it just kind of shows that it wasn't a one-time fluke kind of thing, because this trailer was so good. So good. Short as it was, and as little as it showed. What about you? Did you have any particular feelings about it?
Yeah, I've been a little nervous about Daredevil Season 2, since there was some shakeup behind the scenes after Season 1, and some people going in and out, so, like, hopefully it would be as good as Season 1, which was phenomenal, and the little bit we got from this trailer says, yeah, it's going to be really great. So my hopes went up significantly, even with just that very small amount of footage that we saw.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so moving from Marvel to DC TV news, we don't have a lot since the show is finally premiered, but we did get a couple sizzle reels that were also from Comic-Con. Got one for Arrow Season 4 and one for The Flash Season 2, and they were both featuring new footage for the season. So the Arrow sizzle reel had things like, most importantly, we got to see Sarah. I'm so excited. And she was...
Raise the roof.
I know, I'm so excited. And she was in costume, and there was a shot of her and Laurel and Thea, and I'm just like, give me all the ladies kicking ass together. I'm very excited about it. We saw more Damian Dark. We saw, I'm sure Danya's very excited, of J.R. Bourne.
Yeah!
Yeah, so good stuff, and more Echo Kellum as Curtis Holt. He had a funny moment where he was looking at Oliver and deciding that he couldn't be the Green Arrow because his jaw isn't quite right, so that was cute. And then the Flash sizzle reel kind of teases what's going on with Barry and Zoom, and that was the first that we got to hear Zoom's voice, but now we've heard it a bit more in the episodes. But we found out what Zoom's deal is. He wants to be the only speedster in any world, and all that good stuff. So There's a great scene at the end where Oliver is in Central City and they're at Jitters, and he sees that Jitters has a drink called the Flash, and he's with Barry, and he's like, how long has that been a thing? And Barry's like, oh, like 8 months. Maybe if you stay in Star City, you can get your own drink.
Funny.
It's really cute.
That quip is even funnier considering the premiere party I went to for the first episode of Arrow Season 4 had like cocktails made. Like, they were themed cocktails for the night, and one of them was called Green Arrow, which I had. So it's okay, Oliver, you've got a drink too. Just for one night, but totally counts.
But it was cute. And it shows that we're gonna get some of that lighter tone we were promised.
Yeah.
So that was enjoyable. Did you have any moments you really liked in either of the sizzle reels?
I mean, they were both pretty solid. They both had, like, they were such quick flashes of moments that it was, like, mostly just enough to, like, whet your appetite, because obviously these came before we had too much content of either season. So nothing particularly stood out more than anything else, but like you said, there were some really cool moments, like seeing J.R. Bourne in action. Yeah. Seeing Sarah.
Yeah.
That flash drink joke. You know, those were the really cute moments that you already hit on, the ones that I kind of would have been like, oh yeah, that one and that. But you know, it was just enough to whet our appetites, but not enough to give too much away. So, yeah.
So good stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So we got an interview with executive producers of Arrow after the season premiere. And the big highlight of this is that at the end of the Arrow season premiere, we flash forward 6 months and Oliver is standing in a grave and Barry shows up and apologizes for missing the funeral. And they revealed that they don't actually know who's in the grave right now. They said that, yeah, said, we don't necessarily know who it is right now. We're still planning out the whole season, but we want it obviously to have some resonance. And if it doesn't mean anything to the characters, it won't to the audience either. But they said whoever it is going to stay dead. So not everyone's going to get thrown in the Lazarus pit like Sarah and Thea, but yeah. They don't know who it is. So I was like, that does not give me a lot of confidence. Like, why would you acknowledge that? Why don't you just say, we're not at liberty to say?
Yeah. I mean, there's a way of keeping the mystery in it without it sounding like you didn't plan it out properly. Because it's all well and good saying that you want it to have resonance, but if you haven't planned it out that far in advance before you've actually put it in the show, how is it supposed to have resonance? If you're not actually building the entire season around that, dropping your hints in early enough, building it up, kind of creating that tension, making it so it does resonate whenever whoever it is eventually bites the dust, you know? Knowing that you guys don't know who's in that grave kind of takes away a little bit of the oomph of it, the kind of emotion of it, because now I'm kind of like, well, what's the point of speculating? What's the point of looking for hints and clues? Because there aren't
exactly.
any.
Yeah,
there aren't any, because the creators don't even know who's in the grave.
So what's the point of the tease if they don't actually know what the payoff is yet?
Exactly. Like,
that seems odd. I just wouldn't have admitted that we didn't know, because that just seems like
short-sighted.
Yeah. I mean, I have my own theories of who it is, but if the writers don't know, my theories are pointless.
Exactly. I have my theories as well. I have it down to pretty much two people that I think realistically it would be either or. And Felicity isn't one of them.
Yeah, I don't think it's Felicity.
I don't think it's Felicity. I think Felicity will be the red herring. But how can she even be the red herring? Because the creators don't even know who they're killing off.
Exactly. So that was that. So we also got some stuff from The Flash after The Flash season premiere. Kind of just talking about how season two is going to be a little bit more grown up than season one, which isn't to say that season one wasn't strong, but they're going to be building up on it, and the characters have matured and are dealing with everything that they've been through, with deaths of people they cared about. And a big thing for Barry this season is going to be what was on the videotape where Wells/Thawne admits to Nora Allen's murder, but he also says, you know, I'm going to give you what you want because I know it's not going to make you happy. So even in death, I'm still above you. So that's going to be a thing for Barry, that's all year long, that he's worried about never being happy, even though he got his father out of prison, which is what he's always wanted. So he didn't have the chance to save his mother, or he didn't take the chance to save his mother as well. So that's going to be something he thinks about. And also there's the question of why they wanted to get Henry out of prison. And they basically said they don't want everyone to be like, oh, we're going to the prison. It's time to cry. So they just wanted something new and to mature beyond that. And basically he said it was part of maturing the show. Barry's a grown up now, and he would have been infantilized if he was constantly having to be there for his dad. So it was, and it makes sense. Superhero stories are not about their parents for the most part. So there was reason for it, even if in the story itself, maybe it didn't make the most sense, but there were narrative reasons for it.
I guess it just frees up the story to do other things, which, you know, it's fair enough. If you don't want to be focusing on that as a plot point anymore, if you want to move the show on from that, that's fine. That's a valid choice. Like you said, it may not have made sense, but, you know, if it furthers the story in a different way and kind of untangles it a little bit to allow us to get more interesting stories being told, then, you know, I can suspend my disbelief and brush it off. You know, I do it for crazier things.
I imagine we'll probably be seeing Henry as much as we would have if he had still been in prison. He just might be like calling Barry, or he might drop in for a visit, and he'll probably be around as much as he was. We won't have to go to the prison for the inevitable tearful moment.
Yeah.
On either side of the glass.
Yeah, I guess the other thing is that it brought the show down a little bit as well, because it was always hanging over them, the fact that he'd been put away for a murder he never committed, and Barry's kind of attention being split between his dad and having to be a hero and worrying about both. And, you know, it's just nice to have freed it up a little bit so that it can refocus itself. So, you know, I'm okay with that. I'm cool with that.
Yep. So Barry can move on from the thing that's been hanging over his head since he was 11 years old. So it works. We'll see. But yeah. So, and then final DC news story. We had some more Supergirl casting. And we had casting for Non, who they're calling a former scientist in a league with the House of El. He's a brutal Kryptonian military officer who is sinister, powerful, and angry. He's the antithesis of all things Supergirl stands for and will quickly become Supergirl's greatest threat. And it will be played by Chris Vance.
Yes, Kryptonian villains. It's nice. I say nice. It's not nice as in, yay, someone to, like, beat up our main characters and get really brutal and all that. But it's, what I mean is that it's going to be interesting to see someone on the same level power-wise as the main character. So obviously Kryptonians have the same strengths, the same weaknesses. You know, it's going to be interesting to see someone on, like, a level playing field, even though Non is going to have slightly more experience with his own powers, with his own, you know, identity and all of that. So, you know, there's going to be, I guess he's going to have advantages in some ways over Kara, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing a villain from the same planet.
Yeah, and he has ties to her family. Exactly. So I think that'll be really interesting and what it could mean for her on a personal level, besides just them getting to smash each other around a bit, which I'm sure will be entertaining in itself, but it could have some personal resonance that can be interesting.
I mean, he can hold, like, information and stuff about her family over her head. And, you know, one of the ways to get the upper hand on someone isn't to always have the most power in terms of physical strength, but the most power in regard to, I guess, your mental attacks against someone. You know, being able to push someone emotionally and devastate them that way can sometimes have a bigger effect than being able to just overpower them in physical strength. So that's going to be a really cool angle that they could play up.
Yep. So we're really close. Supergirl is almost here.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for it to finally be here.
I know. I'm excited for it to be here so I can see episode 2.
Okay. And then just briefly, because we've been covering the whole Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter Dub Smash War. The Dub Smash War is over, and the winner was Team Carter. So,
yep. Not by much. Like, it was very, very close the whole way through. But, you know, it was cool that for the final round, they got everyone involved. So the cast and crew behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter in their final video. I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, that was real classy.
It was.
So yeah, the Dub Smash War has ended.
Though there's still that news, the thing floating around saying that Clark Gregg and Hayley Atwell are going to be on Lip Sync Battle. So maybe not quite as over as we think it is.
And you can still donate money to the charities that they were raising money for. So at the end of the day, the real winners were those charities.
Exactly.
So yeah, that is about it for TV news. So we're going to go into our TV discussion. We have quite a bit of TV discussion to discuss. We've got 2 episodes of The Flash, 2 episodes of Arrow, and 2 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to talk about. Where would you like to start, Danya?
Let's go with Arrow.
All right. So Arrow.
Spin the wheel.
Yeah. So we're going to condense the first 2 episodes of Arrow season 4 since we are making up for lost time. So we start Arrow season 4 finding Elicity living in domestic bliss off in suburbia, though Felicity is failing omelets, apparently.
That line.
I know some people didn't like it. I thought it was adorable.
I thought it was hilarious.
I think Elicity has been adorable in the first few episodes of the season. I've really enjoyed how they're playing their arc so far. Like, when Oliver finds out that she's been helping the team behind his back and they kind of have an argument. It's not even really an argument. It's just kind of this adorable frustration. And Stephen Amell isn't even using, like, his Oliver Queen voice. He's using a Stephen Amell voice the whole time.
I love the direction they're going with them. I like that the fact that they've been away for a while, regardless of Felicity getting involved in things back in Star City. You know, it was really nice to see them being domestic, to take the time out to figure out where they stand as a couple, where they stand as individuals, what they want from a relationship. And I think that stability is only going to help now that they've moved back. You know, that balance between Oliver trying to be a hero and Felicity, I guess, running a company now and also getting involved in helping the team, you know, being able to balance that sort of secret identity and huge responsibility with their personal relationship and being able to protect both. I think they're going to get the balance much, much better this season. And I don't think that we need... I don't think this season is going to need drama in the sense of how their relationship will pan out in regards to will they stay together, won't they stay together. I think that really subtle theme of will Oliver propose, will he not propose, I think that's going to be enough in the back of people's minds for, like, not necessarily conflict, but the drama in that. But also, you know, outside forces coming in, them being able to protect each other and the rest of the team and moving forward. That's where the conflict and the drama is going to come in, not, I guess, an upheaval of their relationship and them breaking up. I think the writers, and I think they're going to get it really right this season, if the first two episodes are anything to go by.
I agree. I've been enjoying just watching the dynamic of their relationship. You can definitely see that it's a very even power balance between the two of them. Oliver giving her the fern and packing her lunch on her first day as CEO was precious. And then they're just there, like, I like the scenes that they have together on their balcony where they're supporting each other, kind of whatever they're dealing with that day. So they're showing very much supporting each other instead of really Felicity being there to support Oliver's quest of the year. He's being there to support what she's going through. And that's very refreshing to see. So, yeah, I enjoy seeing it.
Oliver and his slow cooker is like the single most hilarious thing that the Arrow has ever done. Like, that, I'm still not over that. I'm still laughing every time I remember that Oliver is like a domestic goddess with a slow cooker.
He was so happy being a suburban husband. Like, he liked their neighbors that Felicity couldn't stand. Like, he was totally into suburbia.
He was, and it was so funny.
Couldn't be any more different from the Oliver Queen before the ship went down.
I know. I just want him, like, to get, like, an apron with something cheesy on it, and then we get, like, a scene at the apartment that they're in right now, his apartment back in Star City, like, and he's, like, going around with his little apron and greeting Felicity after work with a cooked meal from the slow cooker, and just, I didn't fail this dinner.
So Laurel and Thea eventually show up and interrupt Oliver's planned proposal because there is a new highly militarized force in Star City that's pretty much kicking their butts. They're calling them the ghosts because they quickly disappear and all that stuff. So we find out that Damian Dark, Roz's mortal enemy, is the leader. And he, instead of being like in the shadows for half a season, he walks into the city leaders in the first episode and is like, that guy you're looking for, me, I'm going to kill you all. He's refreshingly horrible. And I love it.
Right. It's so good. Like, when he just rocked up, I was like, I was with Karen and I was like, oh my god, he's just there. And he's like, unapologetically a dick. It's great. I loved it.
But he's also, like, we see in the second episode when Anarchy kidnaps Jessica Danforth's daughter, he is pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's like, there are lines you don't cross. So he has this interesting sense of morality that he's following, which I think is going to make him a really interesting character going forward, just in terms of, you know, his motivations and all that. Besides the fact that he's also like, hello, magic, like stopping arrows with his hands and all that stuff, and sacrificing to altars in his wall.
Yeah. Secret door. It's really, really cool because it lends a sort of, I don't know, it kind of makes him slightly more interesting as a villain because he has this gray kind of area in regards to his morality, because he's clearly got an end goal in sight and he's aiming for that and he has his reasons for trying to get there and he's got a plan. But he also believes that there is a right way to get there and a wrong way to get there. Like, he has honor amongst thieves, almost. Honor amongst villains. But I guess it makes him slightly more layered and interesting as a character, because will that mean that we'll end up, in some ways, rooting for him? Like, is there kind of going to be this really interesting duality with the character where we're not always going to see him as purely evil? Because I always find villains the most interesting when what they're aiming for plays on the same ideals as our heroes. They just go about it in a completely different way. And so there's a lot of crossover in their goals, but their methods are where things are, like, really set them apart. Those are the villains that always interest me the most because, you know, when you get down to the core of it, when you boil it right down, you realize that they all want the same thing. It's obviously, where do you fall in the line of what are you willing to do in order to achieve that goal? You know, so I think that'll make Arrow season 4 quite interesting if we see Damian Dark's goals overlap with Team Arrow's, but obviously them approaching getting to that goal in completely different ways.
Yeah, he tells the city leaders that he wants to essentially put the city out of its misery. Like, he talks about a dog writhing and, like, you shoot it. I was like, already you're talking about killing puppies, so you're horrible. But he was comparing the city to a wounded animal and just saying that you need to put it out of its misery. So he kind of reminds me of, like, the League of Shadows in Batman Begins. Like, you gotta destroy it so it can build itself up out of the wreckage, sort of thing. So that probably won't align so much with the good guys.
No, not particularly.
But yeah, so it's interesting that he's decided to set up base in Star City. So I wonder what he specifically is seeing in Star City that's drawing him there. But we shall find out. So in an effort to combat the ghosts, Oliver and Felicity come back. And he first goes off in a ski mask, and then that doesn't work all that well. So Felicity has a suit ready for him because Cisco made it before he decided to retire, because Cisco is now just the suit maker for all the superheroes, apparently. So
if you need cool.
Yeah, I think it's great that he's costuming, like, all the superheroes everywhere.
It's the Edna Mode of the DC universe.
But yeah, but so no Oliver, capes. No capes. He's going to need to talk to Kara.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, God, could you imagine that conversation?
I love it already. Yeah. But yeah, so Oliver's freaking out because he doesn't really know how to be a fighter without giving into the darkness, and Felicity is using his advice from each season's monologue that he needs to be someone else. So tells him to find another reason to fight, and she shows off his Green Arrow costume, and he suits up and goes off, and he looks very much more like his comic book counterpart. Do you like the new suit?
I do. I love the new suit a lot. I really, really like it. But then I kind of have a fondness for Oliver Queen from the comics. I like that lighter aspect, that almost sarcastic, fun edge to Oliver Queen from the comics. So the fact that we're slowly moving in that direction is really great for me, and the costume is just like the physical representation of that. So yeah, I'm super into the costume. I like it a lot. Good job, Cisco.
Good job, Cisco. You rock. So yeah, so Oliver goes on TV, and they really have a horrible job of framing his face to disguise who he is. Like, I don't know how everyone wasn't like, that's clearly Oliver Queen, because this camera is pointing right at his face and his hood isn't disguising anything, but whatever. So he's like, I'm going to protect the city. And that was the season one premiere. Oh, and we also saw that Diggle is still pissed at Oliver.
Rightfully so.
Yeah, I've seen people being like, Diggle just needs to get over it. I'm like, he kidnapped Lila and put Sarah in danger. Like, even though Lila would probably never was in real danger, since Oliver was never actually brainwashed, like, the fact that he did it at all is really terrible. And Sarah could have been hurt because he didn't have control over all of the minions he had with him. So just because Lila's gotten over it doesn't mean Diggle has to. The baby.
Oh, yeah. I was like,
named the baby Sarah.
I know, I completely forgot about that. I was like, wait, what? Duh. God.
No, that's the gross reveal at the end of the second episode.
It was so bad. No, I have a question for you about that, actually. The reveal at the end of the second episode. Do you think it was necessary to show that?
I guess the point they were going for was to show that, yeah, she actually has been in the grave the whole time, because that is often a trope, but that, like, you open the grave and open this coffin and it's like, oh my god, it's empty, and they're like, nope, not empty, she's been dead the whole time. But I don't know, I think we could have gotten that from, like, their expressions and, like, actually seeing that they're going to Nanda Parbat with the coffin. Yeah. Like, I really didn't need to see that.
Yeah, do you think it was a little gratuitous? Like, it was played up for shock value rather than it actually lending anything to the episode particularly? Because I'm kind of leaning that way. I kind of feel like it wasn't necessary. There were clever framing and scripting choices that could have been made to not turn it into a spectacle for shock value and to still kind of get the point across. Like, I'm not into, like, this gratuitous form of grotesque almost storytelling. You know, I don't like violence and things getting gruesome just for the sake of it and just for, like, being like, look how creepy and edgy we are, aren't we disgusting. Like,
they could have, if they really wanted to be like, look, there is a body in the coffin, they could have shown, like, her lower half or something and been like panning up and then, like, gone off of her before you got to, like, her head or something. It reminded me of season 6 of Buffy when she's, spoiler alert from, like, 10 years ago, she's resurrected with the spell and you get the shot of her decomposing body. That always makes me, like, turn away from the screen, and that's what it made me think of. Like, not necessary.
Yeah, I didn't particularly think it was... Okay, cool. Just because I was kind of like, am I the only one thinking this? Am I the only one who thinks that it's a little bit, like, unnecessary? It's good to know that I'm not alone in that. I hadn't seen anyone talking about it particularly. I hadn't seen anyone reacting specifically to that aspect of the episode, so I didn't know if my thoughts were, like, completely off base or not. But I'll throw this out to people listening as well. What did you think about it? Was it necessary? Was it unnecessary? Do you think it should have been shown? Like, let me know, because obviously Caitlin and I are mostly in agreement over this, and it's nice to get other people's opinions on it. What do you guys think? Hit us up on Twitter, or email, or in a comment, or something. What did you think of Sarah's decomposing body? Oh, right.
So, okay, and then the final thing we get in the season 4 premiere is the grave of... that we don't know who's in and the writers don't know who is in. Yeah. So who do you think it is? Who have you narrowed it down to?
I have narrowed it down to Diggle or Thea. Those are my two...
Oh, interesting.
Those are my two options. And here are my thoughts why. Narratively, it would be very interesting not to see Oliver and Diggle fully make up and fully Diggle to fully forgive Oliver for what he did before he potentially kicks the bucket. so to speak. And I thought narratively that would be quite interesting because it would also hit Oliver a lot harder if he hadn't completely gained Diggle's forgiveness. You know, I think it would be awful. It would be horrible. It would be gut-wrenching, but it would have that resonance that they want. Like, that would give that emotional resonance. For Thea, again, emotional resonance. Oliver's only surviving family member, pretty much now. Also, she's been into the Lazarus Pit previously. Malcolm Merlyn opposed that use of the Lazarus Pit as well. So for me, her getting put back in a second time, which could have even bigger consequences, and having Malcolm oppose it again, and now that Malcolm is essentially in charge of the pit in general, you know, I don't think he would allow it to happen for a second time. So for me, those two, in respect to the narrative, make the most sense. Also make the most sense for Barry showing up as late as he does, because I feel like if it was Felicity, he would have found a way.
And he would be more torn up.
Oh, he would be devastated if it was Felicity. Like,
he wouldn't be there. Like, the scene was played that he was there more for moral support for his friend than for his own grief. And he would be very much grieving if it were Felicity.
Yeah, he would be, oh man, I don't even want to think about Barry's grief if Felicity were to die. No!
I'm telling you, they are platonic soulmates.
Yeah, they really are.
He would be wrecked, yeah. I think it's Captain Lance. That would also make sense for Barry being there more for moral support. Captain Lance has been marked for death since he collapsed with his heart thing at the end of season two. And we see him teamed up with Damian Dark, so it seems like a way he might, like, try to redeem himself once it comes out that he's been working with Dark, even if it's been for better reasons, that he might sacrifice himself. So
interesting. So do you think that's the only choice, or is that the one you've narrowed it down to?
That seems the most likely to me. I don't think it's Diggle, because I feel like that original trio is kind of untouchable of Oliver, Felicity, and Diggle. Like, I think it would screw things up a lot if they messed with that original trio. And I feel like, do we really need to lose any more queens, really? Like, so I wrote up an article and looked at different people it could be, but Lance seems the most likely to me. But we'll see. Because the writers don't even know, so.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of, it's like a cow's opinion. It's a moo point. Terrible Friends jokes. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry at all.
So yeah, just a little bit more about what we've seen with Arrow. We had a plot line of Jerry Ryan comes to town as an old family friend and is running for mayor because there hasn't been a mayor in a while because they keep getting murdered. And they mentioned that Walter doesn't want to do it. And I was like, yay, Walter mention. I miss him so much.
Not just a Walter mention, but also Walter, smart man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we don't need him
He got the F out of Dodge, and he's not playing. Yeah. He's like, no, I'm smarter than this.
Yeah, exactly. So we know he actually is a smart man. So good choice, Walter. And then the villain of the second episode was the guy who is going to become Anarchy, and he was hired by Hive to stop Jessica Danforth, who's Jerry Ryan's character, from running for mayor. And he kidnaps her daughter and is really nasty and was planning to torture and murder her. So, you know, quality human being there.
I was going to say, all around nice. Yeah.
But the main thing in this episode we really saw was Thea's struggle with the Lazarus Pit effects. Like, Oliver's been concerned about it, and he finally comes free, which shows that he really is turning over a new leaf. He straight up tells her, this is what happened, this is what we were warned about, I'm really worried about you. for these reasons. And at first she isn't having it, but then after she breaks the guy's arm, gets into a massive fight with Oliver, and then sets Anarchy on fire, she goes, okay, maybe I do have a problem. So that's the struggle. And yeah, so Thea's freaking out. Poor Thea.
I know. But it's going to be interesting to see how that continues to play out, especially because we're going to see it play out with Sarah as a parallel, because Sarah is like further along in her deadness.
She's been dead for like a year and we don't even know if Thea was dead when she went in.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how those effects differ depending on how far from your death you are, I guess. I don't know. It's going to be an interesting parallel to see play across two different shows.
Yeah, I agree. So that's something that's going to continue. And also, we find out why Laurel hasn't insisted on taking Sarah before now to Nanda Parbat. She didn't know. So no one told her what happened when they took Thea there. So she only just finds out about it now. And she realizes, oh, look, Oliver would do anything to protect his sister. I would do the same, but nobody's giving me the chance. So she offers to, she's going to take Thea to Nanda Parbat for two reasons. And I think she genuinely means both of them. I don't think she's taking Thea as a front for anything, because she genuinely does see Thea like a little sister, that she thinks that that's the best place to get answers for what's going on with her, because she knows Thea is freaked out. But then she also wants to bring Sarah, to bring her back to life. So
yes,
cue digging up her grave.
Yeah.
Ugh. So there's that. And we know obviously it happens because Sarah is going to be in Legends of Tomorrow. So no real news there. But now we know why it's happening now and why Laurel wasn't like, hey, can we do this with my sister who's been dead? Like, that'd be cool. Because she didn't know. So that's good to know.
Communication.
And then finally, Oliver decides that the mayor needs to be someone who can actually take care of themselves, which, you know, in Star City, that is true. So he decides he's going to run for mayor.
Oh, man. Oliver Felicity power couple.
I know.
One is the mayor, one is the CEO of, like, one of the biggest corporations operating within Star City. Dude, anyone else getting, like, weird Tony Stark Pepper Potts vibes from this?
That could be interesting. So yeah, we'll see what happens, but that is a story from the comics, so it's not totally out of nowhere.
Nope. But I'm digging it.
So
a lot.
I think it makes sense for Oliver where he is in his journey, that he's like seeing this happen and then is like, well, I'm like the only person who can actually take care of myself with the people who would actually come to kill me. So
yeah.
Why don't I do it? We'll see how he fares at politics because, you know, he's Oliver, but his attitude,
better than Donald Trump. Yeah,
his attitude now is a lot better than it's been. So
we'll see. Yeah, I guess on a scale from Donald Trump to Bernie Sanders, how well do you politics?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Any final thoughts on what we have with Arrow, the first couple of episodes?
I think I got through most of it. I'm, like, really into Arrow this season. I think the first two episodes have shown a marked improvement over the previous season for me. Because I kind of, my interest, like, kind of came and went with the previous season. It wasn't completely terrible, but, like, there were moments that I was kind of like, ugh, really? But, you know, this one has started off strong and it's continuing strong, so.
Yes. Laying interesting groundwork for the rest of the season.
Yeah, so I'm digging it. I'm into it. I can't wait for the next episode.
My girl!
Yeah!
I'm so excited!
I know. And the further we get through, the closer we get to Constantine, so let's go!
Just a few more weeks.
I know.
Well, shall we go from Star City to Central City?
Yes, let's do it.
All right, so the first two episodes of The Flash Season 2, we find out what happened when the Singularity opened over Central City, that Barry was able to stabilize it, but he couldn't really stop it, and it took the combined efforts of him slowing it down and then Firestorm needed to, like, uncombine in the middle of the singularity and timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly makes it stop, all that good stuff. So,
yeah.
But the only one apparently who survived the whole thing was Dr. Stein, but we never saw Ronnie's body. So, you know, we assume he's dead again, but we assumed he was dead last season too. So you never know. But so for the last 6 months, Barry has been off by himself, feeling super guilty because Ronnie and Eddie both died on the same day, trying to stop all these villains and all this bad stuff going on. So he's pretty much isolated himself from everybody, and he's a sad puppy. What'd you think about Barry?
Poor Barry. I felt, like, really badly for him, because the whole thing with Barry is that he really doesn't like there being casualties. He really wants to save everyone. He really wants to do what's best for everyone. So that guilt is eating up at him, and it was just really interesting to see how, like, what kind of toll it's taken on him. And, I mean, from my perspective, in regards to Ronnie, you know, that singularity, that rift can send people both ways. Who's to say that he hasn't been propelled into a different timeline?
Yeah.
Rather than dying, especially if we haven't had a body, like, you've got to imagine that it works either way, right?
Yeah, well, we know Jay Garrick went through the portal on his end, so assumably people can go through on the end on Earth 1. But even if Ronnie did die, there's probably a Ronnie on Earth 2. So
somewhere.
We'll probably see him again in some capacity, I would imagine.
Well, yeah, whether it's the same Ronnie from the Earth 1 timeline or not.
Yes. So Barry was sad. And during this time, meanwhile, Joe and Cisco have developed an amazing partnership. And they are working on an anti-metahuman task force. And they're adorable. And I love their dynamic because they're both just so quippy. And they appreciate each other. And I love them. I just love them so much. So, anti-metahuman task force, good idea, bad idea?
I mean, in the respects that a lot of them are completely and utterly cray-cray, good idea. You know, not all of them are going to be heroes. Not all of them are going to see this power that they've gained as being a force for good. You know, they seem to be very much in the minority. In fact, the people who have gained powers as a metahuman have primarily been either driven mad by it or have used it to further their gain selfishly. So, yeah, I think it's a smart move. Not necessarily in the respects of, like, the way that it shakes out this kind of task force in, like, the X-Men continuity in regards to, like, no more mutants, wipe them all out. It's more controlling it in a way that these are very dangerous people who either don't know how to control their powers or have kind of figured out the crux of them and are using them in really nefarious ways. So I think it's a smart plan. Personally,
I just wonder how they're going to do without the Flash, considering that Barry was pushing them away for so long. It seems like a good shot at getting themselves killed, but
yeah,
but that doesn't last all that long because Barry pretty quickly decides to reunite the team after some prodding. They have Flash Day to celebrate the Flash, and Barry is not excited about it, but he eventually goes, and it's interrupted by Adam Smasher, and he gets the crap beaten out of him, basically. So that doesn't go well. And while he's on his recovery bed, Joe basically convinces him to repair the relationships that he's broken by pushing everyone away. And he agrees and reunites his team, and together they stop Adam Smasher. And a huge highlight for me has been that Dr. Stein has joined the team.
Yeah.
And he has this amazing dynamic with them. Like, Cisco even lets him name a metahuman. Like, I love it so much. He and Cisco have such a good dynamic, and I love that he's with them.
Yeah. And now you can see how that's gonna work out as well when, because he's moving over to Legends of Tomorrow, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can now see how that's going to work out when that team's put together. Like, this gives us a really good judge on what the dynamic is going to be when he crosses over into that.
Yes. So, yeah. Super enjoyable. I am liking him there a lot since Harrison Wells / Abarth Thawne. I hate that they just keep calling him Wells, even though he wasn't actually Wells. But since that role of leader, sort of wise mentor has been vacated, they kind of need somebody in there, and Stein's kind of stepping in there, though he has his own unique traits about him. He's very quirky, and I love him.
And I mean, I guess that role, once he does move over to Legends of Tomorrow, will then go to Jay Garrick in certain ways. I think in a lot of ways that's how they're setting up Jay Garrick. They're like using Dr. Stein as like that bridge while they build up Jay Garrick's character before they then move Dr. Stein across into Legends of Tomorrow. I'm so sorry. I'm like getting all like stuffed up. I'm not very well. So yeah.
But yeah. So we also find out that Wells / Thawne left Barry Star Labs in his will. So Barry's been taking care of it. But he also left Barry this video that he's supposed to watch. And it turns out that it was a confession to his mother's murder. But before it, he gives the preamble that we talked about before of, you know, I know you're never going to be happy, so even in death, I'm going to prove that I'm so much better than you by giving you what you want. You'll still never be happy. So he...
What a jerk.
Yeah, he's pretty horrible. So he confesses to the murder and he gives just the right details and all that good stuff. So it gets Henry out of prison and it's wonderful. And they have a welcome home party. And I thought for sure they were going to kill Henry there because he has a moment where he like looks sick. And I thought he was being poisoned or something.
Oh, God.
Because I was like, why would you do that? But it turns out that he just decides that he is going to leave. He sees that Barry has a life here and that if he stays, Barry's going to stay in the shadow of his father, who was wrongly convicted of this crime. And he's always just going to be Henry Allen's son. So he decides to leave so Barry can continue spreading his wings, so to speak. So they leave, he leaves, and it's sad, but we talked about it already, so we'll just kind of move on. And the episode ends with them kind of, the whole team gets Star Labs all spick and span again, and they install a new security system and are like, people are just going to be walking in and out again, and then Jay Garrick walks right in. And Sisko is like, you've got to be kidding me. It's such a good comedic moment. But we meet Jay Garrick in the next episode, and he reveals that he is from another dimension, basically. He is the Flash in his world, but he doesn't have his speed in this world. So the whole second episode is very much Barry struggling to trust him because the last time he had a mentor, it really bit him in the ass. So he is just not here for Jay, but eventually it works itself out. But I totally get why he would be untrusting, considering.
Yeah, it's sensible. I mean, the last time someone came and kind of placed themselves as a mentor for him and all that, it really did not end particularly well. It kind of ended really badly, in fact. So, you know, it's not surprising that Barry was kind of like, excuse you, no, I'm not interested. Can you just not with this entire thing? I don't need a mentor, go away, kind of thing. Like, it's not shocking. And yeah, okay, it works out, but it would have been unbelievable if Barry had just, like, kind of jumped straight on board with everything.
Yeah, it's like opening a wound that he really has barely let close because he spent so much time by himself. He clearly has been not letting all the issues he was dealing with heal at all. So it's just picking at a wound that for him is still very, very fresh. So it makes sense. But then...
Definitely.
And Jay is very patient with him. So, like, there's all that good stuff. And Jay and Caitlin have some interesting chemistry going on. Are you shipping them yet?
I don't know if I'm shipping them yet, but I think it's a very, very interesting road to be going down if they do decide to go down it. Like, I could probably dig that. It could be quite cool. But we'll see how it all shakes out.
Yeah, because Jay's going to have to go back to his own world at some point.
Yeah. So. Yeah. But seeing Jay ex Caitlin in this doc made me think, like, what, Caitlin, you have a crush on Jay? What's going on?
Well, there is that, but other Caitlin. She actually spells her name just like me.
Yeah. I was going to be like, wait, Caitlin, you want to talk about your crush on Jay? I mean, cool.
Let me wax poetic about the glory that is Jay Garrick, because I'm not going to lie, he's very pretty.
He is quite pretty.
I like him. Yes. I like him a lot. I like what we've seen with him so far, and Barry eventually sucks it up and allows Jay to teach him how to throw lightning from his speed, and that's how they defeat the metahuman from Jay's world. Because that's the interesting thing, is that Zoom, who's from Earth 2, is bringing metahumans from that world into Earth 1, which is Barry's world, to kill Barry because he wants to be the only speedster. So Jay is like, I know this guy, this is how we can beat him. And they kind of set up a ruse to distract him, and they use that and defeat him. And they kill the guy, which I remember that being a thing that Barry was really against. So that was interesting.
It was very interesting, because it's almost been like, a lot of the time, it's like a no-kill rule with the Flesh. It's so that was different. It's also a different track for the show to be going down, so I wonder if it'll continue through this season, or whether this'll be the only instance of it.
Yeah, because the first few episodes of the series, the metahuman Barry was facing died for various reasons, but they were like, you're not gonna keep letting him die, and they kept trying to capture them alive after that. Yeah. So they sort of evolved from letting the metas die to trying to get them alive. So it's interesting, there was no attempt to get this guy alive. They just were like, we're taking him down.
Yeah. And I mean, in this instance, it's specifically been that was that goal almost of that, like, that was the sort of thing that they went into that fight with, rather than with the ones that we saw in season one. It was just an unfortunate outcome, rather than, like, I don't know, it being their goal. Like, definitely a different track for the Flesh to be taking.
But yeah, so do we like Jay so far? Do you like what you've done with him?
I love Jay. No, I love him. I want more.
Give me all the Jay.
Yeah,
I like him, and I'm really excited to see where that goes. The producers have talked about how Jay's more world-weary, but he knows a lot of things, so he's going to be able to give Barry more information about being the Flash, whereas Barry's going to help Jay open up as a person kind of thing. So they're going to have, and I can see how that's going to work now that we've seen a bit more of Jay. So I'm excited. I really like how the actor is playing him and everything, so... Yeah. All thumbs up for Jay.
Super thumbs up.
So we did get to hear a bit of Zoom's voice. Was he terrifying?
I think he was. Like, I got chills a little bit when I heard him, so I'm kind of on board with the voice. I like it. Well, I like it in the respect of, like, it makes me kind of get goosebumps.
Yeah, it does what it's supposed to do. He's supposed to be, like, this demon, and he very much sounds like one, so...
Oh, yeah.
That was a good choice for a boy. So they said that that's going to be, they're going to spread this mystery out for more of the season than they did with the Harrison Wells mystery last season. So we'll be getting more teases, I guess, so far. But I quite enjoyed what we got so far. So good there. We also got the introduction of Patty Spivot, who is a kind of a freshly minted cop, and she wants to join Joe's task force, and she's very determined to do so, but she's also a total nerd because she reads Barry's forensic reports, and so she's kind of a Barry fangirl for that, which was super cute.
She's adorable.
Oh my god, I loved her.
I love her.
She's great. They have that great moment where they were watching the interrogation and they do like the Monty Python thing.
Oh god.
And they did like the laugh at the same time and they throw their heads back. It was so cute. Like, they have great chemistry. So, but we find out she's really determined to join Joe's task force because Mark Martin killed her father and then he got powers not long after, so she realizes that people who don't deserve them are getting them and are doing horrible things, so she wants to help, and Joe finally agrees. But she was very determined, and...
Oh, yeah.
So, good for her. Unfortunately, she had to be a damsel in distress for part of the episode, but she was great in all the other moments.
Yeah. Hopefully they will overcome that trope with her. Hopefully we'll see her. I mean, if that's where they're going to start off with her, the only way is up. Like, hopefully, because she's a cop. She's not helpless. She had to have got through through school, and she had to get through training. And, you know, seeing her potentially become more competent, the more knowledge she has about metahumans and so on, like, that would be quite an interesting arc for her if we see it continue through this season. But I just really hope that that's not setting a trend for her character.
I agree. I wonder if she's gonna find out that Barry is the Flash. I would imagine she would.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in that kind of circle of people kind of finds out eventually. So considering how closely she's going to be working with Cisco and everyone, like, I can't imagine she'll be kept in the dark for too long, whether she finds it out accidentally or whether they decide that if she's working that closely with them that she should be in the know. Like, yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be a secret for very long from her.
They tend to do things very quickly on this show, so I imagine it'll happen sooner than we expected to. So,
yeah,
that'll be refreshing. I hope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But she's adorable and definitely looking forward to seeing more of her. And then one final point is that at the very end of episode 2, we had a very interesting figure meet with Joe. We saw Mama West.
It begins.
I knew we had talked about the casting, but I wasn't expecting to see her so soon. So that definitely surprised me.
Yeah. It was really cool to see her, like, pop up, and I was like, oh, cool, we're going there already? Great. You know, the sooner that we can learn more about her, the better for me, rather than having it be this kind of far-off thing in the distance where it's, like, hovering over us that we may learn more about the West family sometime in this season in, like, the not-so-distant future. But knowing that it's probably going to come around and turn around a lot quicker, I'm okay with. That's cool.
And we didn't even know if she was alive or not, so part of me was thinking that we'd only be seeing her in flashbacks. So, no, present day, she's here. She's alive. Yep. So,
no fridging for this lady.
At least not yet.
Oh. Ye've little faith, Caitlin.
I've Where is your optimism? About all the fridging that the era has done, so.
I know. Hopefully it won't happen. Hopefully she will, if she stays or if she goes, she will stay or go alive.
But this is going to be a very West family heavy season, so I'm glad that it's starting early. So looking forward to finding out where she's been and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. So,
any other thoughts on The Flash?
No, I think we got through everything.
Jay is very pretty. Moving on. So we got to switch gears now. We got one more show to cover. We're going into Marvel. We got a couple episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they covered a lot of ground. So our first episode really focused on the team rescuing Simmons because they figured out that the monolith is actually a portal. And so Simmons could quite possibly be alive on the other side. So they go and recruit Elliot Randolph as guardian and to get him to help. But he wants to destroy the portal. And they're like, hey, we have someone on the other side. We would like to get her alive, please. Thank you. So in this huge drama, all this good stuff, Daisy uses her powers and opens up the portal. And Fitz jumps in. And he manages to rescue Simmons, and it's all dramatic, and they almost don't grab each other a bunch of times, but then they get her back, and Simmons is alive.
She is alive. She is a little worse for wear when we get her back, a lot worse for wear, but like that whole sequence with Fitz reaching for her and like trying to... God, talk about, like, my heart was racing. Like, I was, like, completely silent. Like, I was just, like, watching. Like, my attention was rapt. I was like, oh my God, are they, like, after all of this, are they actually going to get her back? Or are they going to fail at the final hurdle? Because, you know, it's Marvel. Gut-wrenching heartbreak is what they do, and do quite well. So there was no guarantees that they would actually get Simmons back. But, you know, she is back. She maybe doesn't want to be back.
Yeah.
As we later learn. Yeah. But she's back.
Yeah, I guess we can talk about that. So in 303... she's kind of really struggling with being back on Earth. Like, her systems aren't used to the gravity and all this stuff. And we find she's developed this really massive sensitivity to sounds. So she's really struggling. And Fitz is so sweet and trying so hard to be there for her and be her support and all this. So, like, he helps her walk around the lab and he takes her up to dinner and she has a breakdown. It's really heart-wrenching. But the intriguing part is at the end of the episode, Bobby finds Simmons in the lab and there's all these remnants of the monolith because it was destroyed in the process of them bringing Simmons back. And Bobby's like, hey, don't worry about it. It's inert. It's not going to do anything. It's okay. And Simmons is like, but I need it too. I have to go back. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Which makes me wonder if she's left someone behind. Or maybe. I don't know. I don't know what would cause her to need to go back. Like, she was very clearly trying to escape from someone when we got that flash of her, like, at the end of the premiere. So, clearly, whatever's there is, like, not friendly. Yeah. So, it's kind of like, are there people there that she needs to save? Did she make a connection with someone? Is there, like, something more going on? Is there a bigger story that we're not seeing? Yes, probably. Yes is the answer to all those questions, very likely, but...
we just don't know. Yes and.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, we also don't know that there is any way back. At least not through the monolith.
Yeah, because that was pretty thoroughly destroyed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So
bye, bye, bye.
Ain't no lie. yeah, so for some reason, Simmons wants to go back. So we'll see what happens with that. And I'm sure we'll find out why. And I'm sure it'll be a reason none of us are expecting because S.H.I.E.L.D. is really good at that.
Yeah.
So more to come there. That's sort of been since 302 really focused on the efforts to find her. So it was very heavily focused on that. But 303 was kind of, she was off to the side and just sleeping a lot and dealing. So some other things that we were dealing with. Hunter goes off and finds May, which is not something many people would be able to do. So props on that, Hunter. But he wants her to join on his anti-Ward quest. And I'm like, can I join this team? But we find out that May's been living with her father, saying that he needs to be taken care of. That's debatable, clearly. May's father's been taking pretty good care of himself, it seems like. So, and he's like, why are you here? So he doesn't need her. He knows he doesn't need her. But she's been wanting to be out of the life. But it's very clear that she's never going to be able to feel comfortable with that while Ward's still out there, because she's very jumpy and all that, so.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that kind of struck me about this is that she was more willing to go after Ward and throw herself back into the deep end, so to speak, but didn't seem as concerned about hearing about Simmons. Like, I would have thought that she would have been more, like, a little bit more interested and concerned with finding out what happened there as well. I mean, they were a team together for a very, very long time. You know, I understand her motivations for going after Ward. I just thought that we would have seen her interest piqued a little bit by the fact that Simmons is back.
And she was, like, happy for May, as much as you can see her show emotion. But, I mean, she probably realistically knows that there wasn't anything she could do.
Yeah. So
she's pragmatic like that. She's able to compartmentalize when she needs to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Hunter convinces May to join the anti-Ward quest, and they end up going to one of Hunter's old friends, and they go through this convoluted fight club to get into the lower levels of Hydra, and Hunter's friend unsurprisingly turns on him, because that's kind of what you would expect to happen. But there's a whole lot of fighting and a whole lot of bleeding and bruising, and eventually they make their way in. So they have infiltrated into the lower ranks of Hydra and are gonna work their way up to get to Warden. They are intending to kill him, but we'll see. So any thoughts on that plot line?
I mean, it's interesting. It does feel very much like a side quest to the main plot. It's not really tying in a major way right now. It almost feels a little bit like we needed something to do with Ward, so this is what's happening kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll tie in more as the season goes, but right now it's sort of side questy. Yeah, but we find out, related to that, what Ward has been up to. I'm sure our friend Danielle is happy about that, finally finding out what Ward's been doing.
Yeah.
So he is working to resurrect Hydra, which is funny because he was all staunchly, I'm not really Hydra. Like, I was just here for my mentor. And now he's like, I'm going to run the new Hydra. So, you know, trust nothing that comes out of his mouth.
Need Hydra.
But he is, like, hunting down people who were in Hydra and deciding if they're worthwhile and recruiting others. And he ends up going after Werner von Strucker, and if that name sounds familiar, it should. So he is the grandson of that lovely guy who was experimenting on the Maximoff twins. So, you know, quality people.
Oh, yeah.
So
all around good guys.
Yeah, exactly. So he ends up through this really convoluted test with his own subordinate, tests whether Verna is going to be a good addition to the new Hydra, and he ends up passing the test. So his first mission for the new Hydra is to go spy on the glorious Andrew Garner, our very beautiful, beautiful man. Yeah. So that's not good.
No, it's really, really not. And it looks like from the one angle, Hunter and May are coming at Ward to get back at him for what he did last season, whereas Ward is also coming at them from a very personal standpoint in order to get back at them for what happened last season. So, you know, it's quite personal on either side, I think.
Yeah, so I can see how things are gonna eventually come to a head, since Andrew has still been working with S.H.I.E.L.D. and giving consultations on all the new Inhumans. Well, the new Inhuman, basically, that they found. So, but he's been clearly talking with Daisy, and so he's been involved. So he's back in the fold with S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. So clearly it's all going to circle up at some point with all of that plot line. But right now they're setting it up. So sleazy people or with Ward. Not a shock there.
No.
So that's what's going on there. And then, so the fact that the government has set up a task force to hunt down Inhumans has come back. And it's not a good thing, especially for Lincoln, who is on the run from everybody, including S.H.I.E.L.D. So even though Daisy's like, we want to help you, he's like, hell no. So he doesn't want anybody's help, but he calls an old friend who has clearly been there to help him before and is like, I'll let you stay at my place and I'll sell you my car and all this good stuff. And sounds like he's been there with Lincoln, who has a really depressing sounding backstory. Like, there are references to alcoholism and suicidal tendencies. And so Lincoln, not as shiny and upbeat as we were led to believe when we first met him.
Yeah. Which is quite interesting, because sometimes it's the characters that put on a happy exterior that are the darkest behind it. Like, there are a lot of people who can play a part and put on a mask in order to allow people to see them how they really want to be, but underneath it all, they're a little bit insecure and they have their own struggles. Like, it's very interesting to see that side of him. So hopefully they'll treat it sensitively, because it's a very dark path to be going down. But, you know, so far I've been happy with the way that they've treated it. So as long as they keep going and approaching it in, like, a way that gives the storyline the respect it deserves and doesn't kind of minimalize or treat it in, I guess, in a way that kind of trivializes it or almost doesn't kind of give it the seriousness or the, yeah, I guess the seriousness it deserves. So, you know, hopefully they'll treat it well and it'll be an interesting part to Lincoln's character as we learn a little bit more.
Yeah, it kind of makes you reassess, like, why he was so gung-ho about, you know, being part of the Inhuman community when we first met him and being so into bringing people into the fold and helping them find their way. Like, it's, he clearly found this thing that was unique to him and gave him purpose and probably was kind of what helped pull him out of what he was struggling with. And then finding out that he had been lied to for so much of it, like, it's no wonder that he spiraled as a result, because yeah, it just, his, how much it meant to him becomes into a new perspective when we find out this is kind of where he's coming from. So it,
and that whole, like, support network and that whole coping mechanism that he had and this whole community of people that were there not only for him to support but that was supporting him, giving him new purpose, giving him a new life, you know, that's been ripped out from underneath him and exposed for what it really was. And, you know, that's, he has no coping mechanism and he's literally, like you said, spiraling out of control. So yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to hug Lincoln in this episode so much. But yeah, so his friend is willing to help him until he sees Lincoln's face all over the news. And he's like, OMG. And he calls the task force and is like, he's here. And Lincoln is like, crap. And he's trying to just disarm his friend and he uses his powers and accidentally kills him. Which, oh my God, that's only going to make him spiral worse at that point.
Yeah.
So that was really sad.
I know. It's like from bad to worse.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So he finally calls Daisy and is like, okay, I will come in. Please help me. I'm screwed, basically. And they come to help. Daisy and Matt come and they're planning to bring him in before the task force can get him. But behind the scenes, you've got Coulson and Price talking, and Coulson eventually agrees to let her take Lincoln, which I was not very happy with.
No, me either, actually. I was kind of like, whoa, Coulson, for real? What the hell are you playing at?
Not okay.
No.
So, strike one, Coulson. And when the change of orders comes in, Lincoln is like, F this and flees again. That's what he's been good at. So he runs away again. So with Lincoln gone, Price is like, well, I'm not going to have any Inhumans to show for my efforts. So she threatens to show Daisy's picture on the news. And Coulson has favoritism, so is going to do anything to protect her. So he basically agrees to consult with the task force to protect Daisy, essentially. So.
Shades of gray, man. Shades of gray. Even the good guys do really shitty things sometimes.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine Daisy's reaction to finding out exactly what happened in that meeting, and like, not
Yeah.
pretty. Because she would
No.
not wanted any of that going down.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I mean, Coulson. Yeah. Coulson kind of. To protect more people, I think he would be willing to, like he was going to, give up one person in order to protect many, many more. But considering this person means so much specifically to Daisy as well, like, bad move, especially with how difficult it's been to keep him in one place and to gain his trust. Now that's probably irreparably damaged, and it's not gonna do any good for Daisy and Coulson's relationship, like, especially when she learns what he did and what he's willing to do. Like,
Yeah, it's also kind of short-sighted on Coulson's part because the whole reason that Daisy was really trying to recruit Lincoln back was because they were struggling to like help any Inhumans that they brought in, and they're like
Yeah.
they suck at it basically, and they were like, we know we suck at this, we know who is good at this, so let's bring Lincoln in because he's good at this. So he
Yeah.
would actually be very helpful to them. So it's kind of short-sighted to give up a resource like that, even if we're thinking in Coulson's terms, I guess. Because Lincoln
Yeah.
would have been a very valuable resource.
Yeah, and it's burnt that bridge now. Lincoln isn't gonna trust them.
Nor should he.
And he. No, and he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't need to. I mean, that was a dick move, basically. Oh, Coulson. Maybe Daisy needs to shake him up. Or quake him
Ha ha
up. But terrible, terrible jokes. Gotta make one at least every episode. That's what you're paying me for, except I'm not getting paid. Wah.
So yeah, that's kind of what we've got going on with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Any other thoughts?
No, we're pretty much right there. We got through everything. Hey, look at us go. Yay! And then we've got more episodes this
But
week.
it won't be six episodes that we have to talk about.
No, it's very, very true. We'll be able to keep on top of things and, yeah, exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, now that we're done breaking down all of those episodes and getting through all of that, let's shake through the movie headlines really, really quickly. Not a lot in regards to movie news, except for a couple of big things. So, I guess biggest news from over New York Comic Con weekend was that Marvel has announced an Ant-Man sequel called Ant-Man and the Wasp, which, you know, dual billing for an Ant-Man movie with the characters, which, you know, we were kind of hoping for. We were hoping to see Hope play a bigger part in the next Ant-Man movie, and now that she's in the title for it, you know, I would hope that it would be a 50-50 split between the characters. Other good news in that respect is that Black Panther's been brought forward, so it's been pushed up to February 16th, 2018, instead of being July of the same year. The bad news, guys, Even though we have got a female character with dual billing in an Ant-Man movie, it has pushed Captain Marvel back another 6 months. Yeah, so it is now going to be even longer before we get a solo female superhero movie from Marvel. Yeah, Captain Marvel will now be out March 8th, 2019. The second delay for this movie. The second delay. It's unbelievably frustrating because it is one of the ones that I am most excited for because I love Carol Danvers a lot. But, I'm so conflicted because yay, more hope, but boo, whatever. I'm gonna be like, come on, DC.
Yeah.
When you're my new BFF.
Give me all the Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Which I'm excited for Wonder Woman, but, you know, at the moment, DC is basically giving Marvel a lesson in how to kind of streamline your movie slate into representing the widest array of people possible.
Yeah, and it's showing a whole lot of hypocrisy on Marvel's part because they were like, oh, we can't do a Black Widow movie because our slate is so tightly set for the next 57 years, and they're like, oh, but we need a new Ant-Man movie, so we're just gonna squeeze that in. And oh, who needs that lady movie? Like, really, you could do it if you wanted to. Like, that's totally
they could have. It's but the other thing that came out with this news is that there are three new mystery films for May 1st 2020, July 10th 2020, and November 6th 2020. We are getting three Marvel movies that year. Three. And they're all a mystery. Very interesting. And they're all post Infinity War as well. So, are there any properties that you're hoping for? Not Black Widow. Let's try something. And we all know Black Widow is an option here. We all know that we really want a Black Widow movie. We know that we all want one as the one of the Marvel mystery films. You can't choose Black Widow. It's a given. So Black Widow's out of the question. What do you want as one of the Marvel mystery films?
I wonder if one is going to be a Cap movie with either Bucky or Sam as Cap. And then they were making it a mystery movie because they don't want to spoil the handing of the shield, I guess, yet.
Interesting. We did get those comments, though, that they were making Civil War the definitive end of the Captain America trilogy.
Well, I read that being more like this Captain America's trilogy. Like the Chris Evans trilogy. So it wouldn't surprise me to see more movies with different people as Cap. Because I can see that being the end of Steve Rogers' trilogy.
Yes. So, for me, I have two options which will come at zero surprise for anyone who's heard me talk about these things, like, ever. Now, we know from comments that have been made that Infinity War is going to, like, shake up the Avengers lineup again. For me, I'm kind of hoping that means that the Avengers disband, like, completely. Like in Avengers Disassembled from the comics, when they just kind of break up because everything kind of goes to hell, essentially, and they're all like, you know, no more, that's it. We do more harm than good, that's it, we're done, over. So for the Marvel mystery films, what I would love to see is potentially Young Avengers, where they take up the mantle in the absence of the actual Avengers through the Vision's Avengers Failsafe program, where it searches out potential up-and-coming heroes with abilities that can take the place of the Avengers. Like, I think that would be quite interesting. And obviously, we've started to see characters linked very closely with the Young Avengers coming in. For example, Cassie in Ant-Man, and we've also seen Vision and Scarlet Witch, which the children of those two characters, or the reincarnation of their souls into new bodies. Yeah, It's confusing. It's Marvel. It's comics. Like, it doesn't make like a lot of sense, but you go with it. Like, they are also part of that team, and obviously the next Hawkeye is part of that team, etc., etc. Like, it's all very, 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 very cool. That's one that I would like to see, because if they do disband the Avengers, that would be an interesting way to move forward with the movies. The other one I would like to see is for them to finally do something with the Runaways script and treatment that they have already got. They already have it. It's already a thing that's kind of sitting in the Marvel kind of banks of movies that they could do. I need it. I need it. I think it would be so cool and so interesting. And, because flipping it by taking the children of a team of supervillains operating and basically going all over, and them discovering that their parents are supervillains, and then deciding to, as the title says, run away and become superheroes themselves in order to take their parents down and right their wrongs almost, and basically bring their city back to its once glorious highs. Like, that would be so cool. So for me, Young Avengers or Runaways. And I know that that kind of goes onto the teen superhero track, but it's like one of my favorite things with Marvel. So, yeah.
All right. Speaking of Marvel, we got a couple of pieces of news about Thor Ragnarok. We already found out that they're who the director is going to be. Now we're hearing that it's going to introduce two new female characters, which, thank Thor, I guess. thank Odin. We're going to get, apparently, Valkyrie, a.k.a. Brunhilde, yeah, a longtime member of the Defenders, who hung out with Doctor Strange and had the Norse goddess, the Enchantress, as her enemy. And it's going to, we're also going to see Enchantress, I believe. So, yay, female characters!
Yes, and two really awesome female characters. Like, we've already seen a link to the Enchantress in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We saw a character related to her coming in and wreaking havoc when Lady Sif has to come and chase that character down. Like, that's a character related to the Enchantress. And obviously Valkyrie is just amazing in general. And, you know, amazing Asgardian warrior women, A+. But Enchantress is, her powers are very much along the lines of Loki. So seeing a female counterpart to Loki as a villain, yes, please. That would be super cool.
So, yay, ladies.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of news that we've heard about the new movie is that, brace yourself, the Hulk is coming to Thor. So,
Planet Hulk, Planet Hulk.
Mark Ruffalo is nearing a deal to co-star in Thor Ragnarok. And they said that the film's going to be taking place on a distant planet that won't be near Asgard or Earth. So, Danya, Planet Hulk.
Planet Hulk, Planet Hulk, Planet Hulk. Seriously, though, that would be so cool. I know we've joked about it, like, all the freaking time since he blasted off again in his little plane at the end of Age of Ultron, but okay. If we're just gonna go completely out there, let's go completely out there. Let's go crazy with the Hulk storyline. Why not? Let's do
it. Can I just appreciate that this movie is starring the two Avengers who aren't in Civil War?
Yeah. It's basically like, we're too busy for your stupid puny human bullshit.
Puny god.
We've got bigger things to worry about. That's kind of what's happening, but yeah.
So we don't know a lot yet, but we know we're going to get some more ladies and we're going to get some Hulk. So
yeah,
there you go.
There we go. And finally, in movie news, we have got the official X-Men Apocalypse synopsis, which revealed some very, very interesting things. So I'll breeze through this really, really quickly. So it says, since the dawn of civilization, he was worshipped as a god. Apocalypse, the first and most powerful mutant from Marvel's X-Men universe, amassed the powers of many other mutants, becoming immortal and invincible. Upon awakening after thousands of years, he is disillusioned with the world as he finds it and recruits a team of powerful mutants, including a disheartened Magneto, to cleanse mankind and create a new world order over which he will reign. As the fate of the Earth hangs in the balance, Raven, with the help of Professor X, must lead a team of young X-Men to stop their greatest nemesis and save mankind from complete destruction. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting that we are seeing Raven / Mystique going, like, moving into a leadership role. Obviously, in the comics and the cartoon series, if you watch that, she was essentially the leader of the Brotherhood of Mutants, even though that was linked quite closely to Magneto. She tended to take the leadership role mostly with that. But, yeah, her helping lead the X-Men? Interesting. Very, very interesting. And also seeing her and Professor X team up again and kind of, I guess they would have to reconcile a little bit more than they had previously. Like, that's going to be quite interesting too. But obviously seeing Magneto disheartened and kind of ending up under Apocalypse's thrall, not too surprising. So,
I mean, I thought they were going to tease that their greatest nemesis was his lumberjack beard, but, you know, whatever.
But yeah, it just kind of teases some interesting details for Apocalypse. So, again, looking forward to it. I do enjoy X-Men. I just hope that they do the Apocalypse story justice. So, yeah. Okay, let's go to quotes of the week, seeing as we're done with movie news. That was
fun.
Caitlin, do you want to go with your quote of the week?
Sure. Mine is from the season premiere of The Flash, and it's just Iris being her supportive self, and she says, "Central City believes in The Flash, so do I."
Aww.
So.
That's so sweet.
I love Iris. They haven't given her much to do yet, so.
I'm hoping that'll come now that Mama West is in town.
Yeah, I like she has kind of taken a leadership role on the team, too. Like, she kind of pushes to get everyone back together. So, go Iris.
Yeah, the glue that is holding them together. Mine is from the Arrow season premiere. And it's basically when Oliver and Felicity return to Star City and kind of head over to his apartment, and he's kind of like, "Thea's been living with Laurel for the past few months. Roz stabbed her right over there. We can get a rug."
I love that, like, he sees Felicity's face and is like, "Oh, but we can get a rug. It's okay." Like, really?
Like, that's the solution.
I don't think that's what she was worried about.
I thought it was great. And it just kind of set up the tone a little bit more, like, yeah, we can get a rug. Oh, Oliver.
Like, he's flipping. He's being funny.
Yes. He really, really is, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, good stuff in the first two episodes.
Yeah. Okay. No comic corner for this episode again, guys. Kind of because we're doing so many episodes in a row, it would put, like, a massive strain on me to be able to get out that many comic corners in a row. So, taking a break for this one, but there will be one in the next episode that we release. So, episode 26 will have a comic corner in it, but I don't particularly want to die with the amount of research that I would have to do in a matter of
days. But we could just throw you in the Lazarus pit. It'd be okay.
I'll come back crazier than ever. It'll be great. So episode 26, Comic Corner will be back in episode 26. Don't worry, that is my solemn vow to you guys. I promise it is back. Okay, so speaking of back, here's our feedback. Obviously, there hasn't been much conversation generated, except in regard to some of the tweets we've been putting out, because obviously I haven't gotten the previous episode up yet, but it will have been up by the time you're listening to this. So this is just what's been coming through on our Twitter account. First bit is Anthony Ciano sent us a tweet saying, "I have a fan cast for you all, and I feel Ronda Rousey would play a fantastic Captain Marvel." Anthony, my sweet summer child. No. Unfortunately, this is a couple of episodes ago, I kind of went over a lot of why I'm not on board with Ronda Rousey being Captain Marvel. Not, again, abridged version, nothing to do with her as a person. I think she is fantastic as what she does as an MMA fighter, like her achievements. There is nothing that can take away from how amazing those are. Her as an actress, and I'm saying this specifically from what I've seen her acting in, she cannot carry a movie with her current skills. Like, that wouldn't happen. Like, she doesn't have the innate acting ability that someone else would have. And it's easier to train someone in being able to fight and do stunts and basically use the power of cinema to kind of showcase that, rather than trying to cover up and disguise someone's terrible acting ability. Personal opinion, not into it. I know there's a lot of people who do want to see her as Captain Marvel, and that's fine. What works for some people doesn't work for others. But, you know, maybe now that it's been pushed back to 2019, yeah, maybe she'll have enough time to to get some practice in. But for right now, I don't think she's the best choice that's out there that can do both act and the physical aspect of the role. But further discussion happened a few episodes ago, if you want to go back and listen to it. So sorry to disappoint, but if you're into it, that's great.
All right, so Mai asks, "Do you ever struggle with reading a comic because the art is just so very not to your taste?" Janya?
Yes. Yes, there. Sometimes I find it difficult to get into a comic because I don't like the art. And it seems very superficial, but, you know, sometimes it just doesn't click for you. And that's okay, because what works for some people in comics doesn't work for others. And you're not always going to like everything that's out there. You're not always going to connect with specific writers, much in the same way you're not going to connect with specific artists. What you might find when I'm recommending comics from the 60s is that, compared to the standards that we may hold comics to now, the art and the writing style isn't always there. So yes, I do struggle with that. I will usually try and give it a couple of issues regardless, just to see if I connect with it in a different way and I can get over the art style, but sometimes it's not possible. And, you know, for me, that does mean that I can cut out a couple of comics that I don't necessarily have to follow as closely. But yeah. Next piece of feedback is from Gwendolyn. So Gwendolyn says, "Love your show. Maybe you could do something about Iron Man. Bonus points for Karen as a guest host." Funny you should mention Karen coming back as a guest host. We did try to get her back on a couple of episodes ago. Unfortunately, real life is a meanie sometimes, and it meant that she couldn't make it onto the episode at the times when we could record. But we do want her back on, and obviously in the lead up to Civil War, we will be doing a lot more on Iron Man. It's just going to be the kind of natural progression of things. And of course, we can't do anything about Iron Man without Karen. So, yes.
We would never dare.
We would never dare have an Iron Man heavy episode without Karen. So, rest assured, she will be back if we are talking about Iron Man. In fact, she will be the first person we will be asking onto an episode when we need to talk about Iron Man. You know, She has a lot of feelings about the guy.
What? Karen? No.
I know. Karen is to Iron Man what I am to Hawkeye, so...
All right, so Leah says, finally caught up with Hero Hype Podcast and eagerly looking forward to the next episode to hear everyone's thoughts on The Flash. So we finally talked about it. Sorry.
Sorry it took us so long. Again, all blame lies with me. New York and then illness and then, yeah, all sorts. But hey, it's finally up. So... And our final piece of feedback is from Andrew, which was in regard to the rumors about Fantastic Four when they came out, and says, no, I really did enjoy the cast. I realize that Marvel can't just keep pushing things back, but enough reboots. Reboots. Can't Fox and Marvel work together? So Fox puts out the movie and Captain Marvel keeps her spot. But damn it, I just want stability. Obviously, as far as we know right now, that's not happening. So we're still going to get stability because it's not going back to Marvel. Or is it? Probably not. But maybe. Oh, the uncertainty of the superhero adaptions. So, seeing as this episode and the previous episode are coming out in quick succession, we will stick with the question of the week from the previous episode so that you've got enough time to answer it and get back to us. So, again, question of the week is, what powers would you want if you were an Inhuman? So, that will continue to be the question for now. And that's it. Super long episode, guys. But obviously we had to get through 6 episodes of superhero shows. But yeah, I think from now on we'll be weekly and we will be keeping on top of our discussions. So yay! Thank you for your patience and for not necessarily hounding us on or like poking me on Twitter and being like, Donya, what's going on? Donya, what's taking so long?
Yeah, because if you handed me, I'd just be like, ask Donya.
Yeah. It is. It's all on me. But hey, we're back. And you've got 3 whole episodes to listen to once we get the last of the shows that need to air for this week out of the way. And then we can recap those because at the moment we're still waiting on a couple to air and for me to be able to watch them. So... until the next episode, which will be very quickly on the heels of this one, I'm Donya.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we will see you again in the next episode. Bye, guys.
Bye. So, Elicity is on good terms so far. Oh, and that's not even my phone. Just kidding. Sorry.
Boogie on down.
That's my mom's phone, and she left it here. So.
Well, no. This is a Hero Hype dance party. That's what's going on.
He seems to do pretty well for himself. Yeah. And there's my dog's sneaky toy.
Maybe your dog's pretending it's Ward. It's like you mentioned Ward and suddenly it's like...